This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
They tried to make me go to rehab, I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they tried to make me go to rehab.
Good evening and welcome to Hooked, Joy 94.9's program about addiction. Research shows that the LGBTI community has addiction problems of at least twice that of the general population, and we want to explore why and how this has come about. There are many suffering addiction, many more that are affected by those in active addiction, and people that are grateful in recovery.
My name is Russ and we're back. What are some of the reasons behind this problem? Are there pathways towards recovery and change? How does addiction affect loved ones, family members and partners of those in active addiction? You know, David, we're not experts in these fields, but we're just a couple of friends who both happen to be in recovery. We believe that there needs to be more conversation in our community.
Of course, if you'd like to join us in that conversation, you can SMS us on 0427 Joy949. That's 0427 569 949. Or email us at onair@joy.org.au or hooked@joy.org.au. If you're experiencing immediate problems or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14, that's lifeline.org.au, or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, which is beyondblue.org.au. Well, it's great to be back, Russ. It's
can
been
you
a while.
It? Where has Hooked been, David? We've been resting.
Well, yes, we have been resting. It's
resting
been quite
researching.
A rest, actually. Yeah.
2 grids we've been gone for, and God, it's good to be back.
Yeah, look, we had an amazing 2 seasons last year, which was a sensational time because we've learned so much and we've talked to so many different people. Yeah. We were up for a community broadcasting award later in the year, which
for
was.
Journalism, would you believe that?
Well, I know, which was a great experience
as well.
You didn't
get the Logie, though, did
we? No, but you know, we were certainly up there in contention, and it's been a great break, and of course, now we've got this season coming up with amazing guests.
It is. And for those of you who have never listened to Hooked before, we are a show all about recovery. And we like to talk about alcoholism and drug taking and overeating. What else?
Gamblers
Anonymous.
Smoking,
actually, smokers,
if you do like the style of the show and you want to check out some podcasts, you can go to joy.org.au/hooked and you'll see a whole range of podcasts, things like First Strategies, people that we've talked to right throughout the last 2 series. And of course, there's a Facebook page as well, which is Hooked on Joy 94.9. I think I mentioned to Matt before on World Wide Wave that we are Hooked on Joy 949. So you can check that out on our Facebook page as well. Yeah. Tonight, our guests are Jeremy and Daniel from Q Health. It's great to have you both here.
Great. Thank you so much for having us here.
Hello, good to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, look, we've only briefly met before, certainly at Midsummer Carnival. You were both there, of course, and we've been dying to have you on the show because last year, just as we were getting towards the end of the season and we sort of talked to each other and we wanted to talk about Q Health and what Q Health does, we didn't have enough time to be able to fit into that last season. But so do you want to first start off by explaining where Q Health is, because it's part of the Merry Group, and how does that all work together?
Well, Merry Health is a community health service, and it's based in the northwest of metropolitan Melbourne. So some of our area ranges from the inner city of North, so from Yarra, all the way down to Preston, right through to Coburg, because we actually are based in Coburg and Brunswick, and also we work all the way to Werribee as well.
Oh, wow. That's
so
a big
it's
area.
Quite a large area, yes.
Yep.
So that's we do a fair bit of outreach, so that's some of the area that we do cover.
So certainly people in Fitzroy and Brunswick and some of our gay neighbourhoods, or gayborhoods as we call them, are people that are in your catchment area.
And even outside. Absolutely, even outside. So they don't actually have to live in our area, so anyone who in any of the queer community or LGBTIQ community that can go, that work or can access us in those areas, we'll try to do what we can to support them.
Okay.
Talking to you before the show, Jeremy, you said we don't actually like to use the word GLBTIQ. You just prefer to call it our community.
Oh,
and
I really
like that. I really like that. I thought that was really, really nice.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So Q Health, how did it all come about? How did you guys get involved?
Well, I was actually at this stage when it first started, I was volunteering counselling at that stage. It was the Victorian AIDS Council, which is now Thorn Harbour Health. And the manager said, oh, look, there's a job I think you'll be great for if you want to go for it. And that was with Mary Health. And it started, there was a new service available in Mary Health with another organisation in collaboration with Drummond Street at the time. And they wanted to do some drug and alcohol counselling for people in the north and the western area because there was nothing much there for people who would feel safe with an organ. And so Mary Health have got their rainbow tick, which is really, really important for, as you know, people in our community.
Mm.
So that's how it first started. So it just evolved from there and we became all of us with qualifications and lived experience in our communities, worked with substance use issues.
And when did that start?
Ooh, I think it was 2000. We first got there in about Easter 2017.
Right.
So I think there's an important bit to mention that a key part of the program is queer identified practitioners working with queer identified participants. Yep. And that's what stands Q Health apart from the other drug and alcohol programs. I mean, there are some similar ones, but that's an important part of the work. So that when people come to us, they're like, oh, I don't need to talk about my queerness so much or my sexuality or my identity, and I can just be accepted and get that I have a drug problem. I don't have a sexuality problem or a queerness problem.
It's sort of taking that off the table and actually getting to the crux of what the issue is rather than going to a general GP or a psychologist or something or other.
Well, that's
and great. They might actually say, well, you know, it's all about your queerness or it's about your acceptance of your identity or it's about your sexuality. You can sort of go, okay, that's off the table.
Yeah.
Let's get to the crux of your problem or what you want to talk about and all that sort of stuff.
And some familiarity because we... queer identified practitioners and also with lived experience of substance use. So it's also there's no stigma about, not only is no stigma about your sexuality, but there's no stigma about substance use. Mm-hmm. So you can just come in and say, here are some things that are happening, but my issue may not be the substance. In some cases, it may be financial stress or it might be homelessness or mental health or whatever. So we're looking at the issue rather than stigmatizing or pathologizing the person.
Mm. So Q Health, what sort of services does it provide as far in the addiction space? Because that's what our program is about, of course.
Well, to answer that question, I think with us, we our experience with alcohol and other drug work. So, but if you talk about addictions, you've got to talk about a lot of things which are bigger. And so we think it's about people who use substance, whatever it may be, for self-medication, for other issues that are around. Mm. So for us, there's a whole lot of other things that people are working with apart from the substance that they're using to self-medicate.
Mm.
To answer the question also, I wonder if you're meaning in terms of services. So we do counselling. Is this what you mean?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry.
So we do face-to-face counselling with individuals or whatever number of people. We also do what's called outreach, so we can go to where people are. So like in the past, I worked with a person who is agoraphobic and they couldn't leave their house.
Goodness.
So I had to go to their house. Daniel does a lot more outreach than me and he... he's been to court with people recently. We can meet people in cafes or near where they live or at their work. Mm. And sometimes the outreach can be supporting people to get to a service if they need an emotional support to go to a medical service. So I've been with people to psychiatrists, to legal people. And we also do a thing called secondary consults. So we will work with other practitioners who want to know about how to work with queer identified people with alcohol and drug problems.
That's an amazing service because I know we often talk about alcoholics or drug users that are high functioning, that can get around in this world. They can keep a job. They have a home to live in. They've got friends and family, but they're too scared to reach out for help. So that's because of
stigma and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
To be able to actually, I'm just sort of thinking a normal practice, you would be thinking, okay, I'm making an appointment and I have to go there and be there at that time and all that sort of stuff. This is totally different to anything else we've heard of.
Yeah.
As well as what you're saying, Russell, we work with those people that have trouble accessing us. Mm. So those people, we'd say, with disabilities, maybe intellectual or other presenting issues, they could be homeless. So that's why we are able to go to them. They may feel unsafe due to whatever concern, if they're transgendered, and there's a safety issues for them to get on public transport.
Yeah.
So, and that's a huge risk, and it's a real risk for our people. Mm. So that's where we can go to them, because they're unable to go to us, those with intellectual issues or literacy issues.
Some people are also just uncomfortable being in a white counselling room, and there's some people I will meet for lunch, and we have lunch, and it's still counselling, but it's a much more informal experience to be eating together and doing something that looks sort of like a regular thing you might do with socialising, but it's actually still the work. It's still therapeutic.
Well, you've got to hear the story somehow, don't you? Yeah. I think the more relaxed a person can be, the better.
So how do we actually access your services?
There's several different ways that people can do it. We've got an intake line that people can ring. So the number is 1-300-637-744. So they can ring that number and get and have a chat with our intake person, and that'll direct them to us. Another way, certainly. It's 1-300-637-744.
Okay, that's Q Life.
Q Health. But that's actually the Mary. So if you called that number, you'd come to what's called Service Access, which is a centralised thing of Mary Health, and then they would email us from there. But you can email us directly, which is qhealth@maryhealth.org.au. Mm.
And, of course, we'll put those details up on our podcast. Yep. The podcast will be up in a couple of days. So if you want to certainly access those that sort of information, you'll be able to get that from our podcast.
I know this all sounds very exciting to me. I know when I first got sober back in 2008, for me it was I went and saw my GP. We discussed the fact that I was an alcoholic, and then I went to rehab and then on to AA. But I certainly... I was carrying around a lot of baggage, mm-hmm. internalised homophobia, all the stuff that comes with being a gay man in their 40s and with a substance abuse problem. Has that changed a lot now? I hear you saying people can come to you, and is there the baggage that people bring in as far as being gay, internalised homophobia? Have things changed in the past 12 years, or is it easier for our community now?
Yes and no. So yes, because I think for some people who do have access, that they can access us and ask those questions themselves. No, because some people still feel that... that real internalised homophobia and that shame. Mm. So the biggest thing we try to get people, and a lot of the referrals we get are from other agencies, can you have a chat with this person to see if you can support them, if you're the right agency to support them. So yes, I get people in similar situations even now with internalised homophobia. They have a picture about being quote unquote a gay man, drug induced, chemsex, right. And that's all the being gay is about. So they must try to teach people that being gay does not mean you lose your self-respect. Also with that, we get people who have got suffering characteristics of gender dysphoria and body dysphoria.
Right.
So I've had a client who's doing really well now, but I was there when... before they started transitioning from female to male.
Yes.
But couldn't understand why they hated their body, and they were misdiagnosed, but we went to Equinox together, and now they've transitioned medically and through the births, deaths and marriages, and now they're fine and living a happy lifestyle. So with that, and hating themselves and not knowing that as well. So that's just another example of someone's journey.
Yeah.
Some people who are trying to... get recognition of their transition, of who they are, and because they were getting a lot of transphobic attitudes from people around them where they were living. So, and that's a lot of stress on them as well. So there's a lot there about people's specific journey, about how they can, you know, how we can help them.
We work with really diverse, like I've worked with teenagers all the way up to 7-year-olds. 70-year-olds. And within that, like, so Daniel talks about the community, and I think where it's communities, like all the letters of the acronym have each have such different presentations. And like, I do work with gay men, but I also work with intersex people, and I also work with trans people and bi and trans folk, so gender diverse people. So all those folk are all having some form of, if you call it internalized homophobia or gender issues, but and we, the way I work is I weave between like what is your identity or what is your sexuality, what is your mental health, what is your housing, what is your diet, like what is your everything. And Daniel and I have a passion about a thing called intersectionality. So we want to know really like what is the complete holistic tapestry of these people's lives, of which, you know, gender and sexuality is part. And often for some people it's not those parts, but it's the discrimination from society to those parts that is the hard bit. Some people can be very happy with being whatever flavor they are, but get a lot of pushback from family or friends or the media or our government or wherever. So, yeah, to answer your question, there's a complexity of like, yeah, there's always internal disruptive bits, but depending on your age, depending on your identity, is like how much that is going to affect you or not.
Which is interesting because I know when we started the program 2 years ago, there wasn't a lot of talk about trans people, you name it, intersex, and now we're finding that that's more and more out there in the community.
We've received a couple of messages actually tonight, and the first one says, really glad to hear this show is back, really important for everyone who is affected, especially people with addiction, which is often lonely. Glad you have a better airtime. Well, we are too as well, Russ.
We are.
Do you have another message there?
Look, I'm absolutely thrilled that these guys have messaged in.
Yeah.
At the moment, we've got a message here from Will, and Will's been battling meth addiction for 15 years. Today he is celebrating 100 days clean. Well done, Will.
Excellent. We love great stuff.
He goes to 3 NA meetings a week and visits psychologists once a fortnight, made a huge change to people, places and things to avoid. Just for today, he is grateful for a second chance and we are loving you.
Yeah, go
message
Will.
Message us anytime,
that's excellent.
Will.
I'm glad you've got another day up. We have another message. Great to hear you back, guys. David and Russ, such an incredible and important topic. Definitely hooked.
And the last one is, hello, Hooked. I have a friend with an alcohol addiction who recently fell off a bar stool because they were so intoxicated. However, they won't acknowledge they have a drinking problem or get help. What should I do as a friend? Cheers, Canberra.
Well, good question.
Well, Canberra.
yes, Russ. What do you think?
I would suggest that they perhaps go and see a doctor or a counsellor and talk about their drinking. Or
maybe go to Q Health.
Yeah, go to Q Health or give Q Health a call, which would be excellent. Is that what you guys would want them to do?
Well, I'm wondering if the question is how does the person sending the message talk to their friend?
Yeah.
And is that the question?
I would have advice along those lines of, you know, find a quiet time and rather than blame and shame and just sort of say, well, you know, I notice that some things are happening at the moment. Do you think this has anything to do with your alcohol consumption? And just open a very calm and relaxed conversation.
Do you guys get many people call you saying, my friend's got a problem?
Yes, we do.
It
could be about a friend or a family member, or it could be they just don't want to. There's a lot of shame in admitting to yourself about what's going on. So, and sometimes it's good to talk about someone in the second person.
Right. Yeah.
Because they don't want to direct it onto themselves. So,
we also have scope to work with what we call affected others. So even this person who sent the message could contact us for support. And in addition to what David said, I think it's worth saying, not only, you know, asking the question, but saying, hey, I'm concerned, you know, let it be from like, I'm worried about you, can be a good opener of not just the kind of finger pointing, like you're bad and you're an alcoholic, but hey, I'm here to support you. And what kind of support do you need? And can I come to a service with you? Or do you need some research to find out about this? Or, you know, maybe this is affecting your life and I'm worried.
Well, this is it. You know, Russ and I are both in recovery. If somebody had said to either of us at the time of our addictions, you've got to stop, You just go, no way.
Yeah.
Denial is a big
Anyway, we do need to get back to Q Health because I was wondering before, what happens when I arrive at Q Health? I've made an appointment, I front up, I get through the front door and I'm feeling good because I'm in a very safe environment. What happens when I arrive?
Can I add just before we get to that bit, the service is free. Mm. And that's really important to mention, with unlimited sessions. So a lot of the people we work with are quite surprised with that, because the normal model is go to a GP, get a mental health care plan,
get 10 sessions,
and then you're out the door. So no fee, no referrals, no mental health care plan, unlimited sessions, which is quite amazing.
Although this program is about recovering, it doesn't have to be about just recovering.
Good point. Yeah. So we work in a harm minimization model, which means that there are some people who say, I have problematic meth use, but I really want to be into recreational drugs or alcohol or cigarettes or whatever. Mm. And the way we work is, we're fine with that. You do not need to be sober to participate. Mm. And I work with whatever the substance the person wants to work with, and they may still use other things. And we're really fine with that.
It's getting that conversation opening. So I've arrived at your practice in Coburg.
Yeah.
And I've come in the door, what's going to happen?
So depending on what's happening there and where you are and how you feel safe, so when we do an assessment to find out what's happening with you, where you are, what your journey is, it could be just one session or it could be a bit heavy and may need a break, so it can go over, say, another week or something like that. So it's just maintaining that safety for you to find out what your priorities are and how we can work with that. It could be a family member or someone you care about who could have the substance use, or it could be you, it could be some other dangers. As you know, with substance use, domestic violence plays a major role in that as well.
Daniel, how do you get people to be honest? Because we know those in addiction notoriously dishonest.
It takes a lot of time and a lot of trust.
It's not easy to be honest, either.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think what Jeremy was saying, that we've got the ability to work with people at their pace.
Mm-hmm.
So, and having unlimited sessions with them means that we've got the time to earn that trust. It's not one of those seagull syndromes. You go fly in, you fly out, and that type of thing, where you leave them just hanging, what's going on here? So we can stay with them.
Yeah.
And I feel that we have to earn their trust and earn their respect to stay with them. And that consistency, I think, bit by bit, more comes out about what we can do to help them gain control over their own lives.
I'm working currently with a person that I worked with for 2 years, and sometimes we have weekly sessions, and that's quite a big building of rapport, like that amount of momentum. I want to add just a couple of other things. Also, we work from a few different sites. So one is Coburg, but also Brunswick, which is a little bit closer sort of this way. But like we said, we can meet people where they are. And also, in addition to what Daniel's saying, a person comes in, we'll do what we call an assessment, like figure out where they're at, what they need. We have 3 workers at the moment. And sometimes people say, oh, I really want to work with this person, or I can't work with this person. So we all also, what we call, allocate the person to an appropriate practitioner.
Because you both have different specific areas that you specialise in.
Yeah. We're quite different and similar.
Yeah. So as well as what Jeremy's saying, so we've got a great agreement with Odyssey House in Werribee. So I go there and if the need arises. So if I get clients in the western area from Bagus Marsh and all that area, if they can get to Werribee, then I can see them there, because it'll be harder for them to travel all the way to the city or to Coburg or to Brunswick. So we try to be flexible to suit where you are to help you feel safe and for you to access us, because for you to travel 2 hours to counselling is just not going to work. It's not viable.
And so when a person comes in, like I work differently from Daniel. I'm not even sure how you work. probably it's very good. But we don't have a particular model. Like, it's not like, hey, this is CBT, like...
And you wouldn't want to have one either.
No.
I called my style meandering, so I'm just kind of like wriggling around and just trying to find the thing. And it's client-led and it's strength-based. So it's like, I say to the person, you tell me where we're going. If you get a little bit lost, then I might be a bit further down the path and I might say, well, it's this way or this way. But it's really about that person, what they need right now.
Yeah.
And for some people, it looks like chatting. And for some people, it looks like digging through the compost and going into trauma. And it's really specific to that person and what they need then, what they want.
Because as well as that, because I come from a cultural and linguistic background, and so I do work with a lot of people from a non-Anglo-Saxon background, and the the Western model of a lot of drug and alcohol services is that they work individually with the client. However, in some cultures, you work with the family. Mm. So it's more family therapy work with dealing with substance use. So I do a lot of that work as well as... and it's got to be... It suits the people around you to suit their world, not the other way around, because it just won't work. And also working with people with disabilities with substance use issues. So I've got to go at their pace. It's no point for them to suit how I work. Mm. So as what Jeremy says, we have to work what best works with the individual, not the other way around.
And so. I guess you would complement each other in different ways. Like, for example, ice. Okay, let's talk ice and the amount of sex that people have with ice. Now, you're a sex therapist as well. Yep. So these two things must complement each other.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
That would be a great way to work with an individual who is just saying, look, it's out of control.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah. Yep. I've got I feel as though I haven't got any morals anymore. What should I do? Blah, blah.
Yeah. I talk about sex quite a lot in my sessions, and I can. But some psychologists and some other practitioners get really squeamish when people come in and want to talk about sex and what kind of sex they're having or not having, whatever. But I think it's a really important part of our health and lives and well-being.
You know what I want to talk about? I want to talk about sex.
Yay.
And not necessarily
Let's talk about that, baby.
Well, you know, it isn't necessarily about sex addiction, but of course that is something that you obviously would be able to have... a chat to somebody about.
Yeah.
But there is a very big proportion of, certainly in our community, of people that have addiction with usually crystal meth and sex and the two together. And there's certain programs now being evolving. Tell me about sex and drug addiction.
Yeah. So especially for young gay men, chem sex is a really big problem. Meth itself is a problem. What becomes problematic for people in their recovery and sobriety is having sexual experiences without substances, so without meth. And the sober sex is very difficult because the meth increases, drops inhibitions and increases libido and makes longevity. And then when you're making poly drug use, where you're adding, you know, like Viagra or ecstasy or whatever into the mix, and K and G, then the sober sex seems boring. And so people I work with saying, well, I don't know if I can do this, and I don't know if I want to do this sober sex thing.
Yeah, we had a bit of a conversation with one of our regulars last year, Nurse Betty, and Nurse Betty was talking about how, you know, we can eat a piece of cake and we get this particular high, we can have sex and have a high again, and then you introduce drugs, and suddenly it's an explosion to a completely different atmosphere. Not that we're promoting that sort of behaviour, but at the same time, you would have people that come back, as you say, in abstinence, and they're going, well, what am I going to do now?
Yeah. So interestingly, like, although the physiological sensations can be greatly increased, the intimacy is often greatly reduced and diminished. So what the people I'm working with find is what they have to focus on is their connection to themselves and their connection to the other. And that's a really, it's almost like a whole new landscape for these people in sobriety of having sex. It's like, oh, so I'm here and you're here at the same time. Whereas in the past, I think it was just like, let's see how high I can get and me. Exactly. Yeah. So it's learning new sensations, new experiences, new interpersonal experiences.
As you said, you're a sex therapist.
Yeah.
But there's a program that I've heard about. Is it called Defrosted?
Defrosted, yes.
What is that about?
Thank you, David, for mentioning that. So Defrosted is a new program that's a partnership between Thorn Harbour Health and Mary Health, and myself, I'll be running that from Q Health. And it's for gay men, trans men, bi men who are in recovery and have some time of abstinence already under their belt to come together. It's going to be an 8-week therapeutic peer group. So we're going to get together, and each week we'll have a different theme. The kind of the majority of it is about sexuality, relationships, and intimacy. But either side of that, we'll be looking at being healthy, mental health, good strategies for well-being. Not so much talk about actual drugs and drug use. Thorn Harbour, I'm sure you know about the Rewired and Rewired 2 programs. They're great programs, but they're actually for people who are using or have just become sober.
Yeah, certainly Rewired looks at use, and it's in a very non-confrontational way where people may continue to use or maybe not.
Yeah.
And then Rewired 2 is for those people that have chosen abstinence, and it becomes a group where people can explore what's happening with their lives and other things. So, they're great programs.
Defrosted
is different again.
Defrosted is different again, and it's a bit further down the track. It's for folk like maybe 6 months, a year or so, who are not going to have relapses, but maybe a little lost, need a little bit of support from a group of people and some strategies to come back to sexuality and intimacy. If you want to be part of that group, you can contact Thorn Harbour Health, and that's where the intake is happening, and they're very easy to find. And I think the program is on their website currently. I'm really excited about it because I think it's in part for the individuals, but it's in part for the community also to see, it is possible to have recovery. It is possible to be sober from meth. Because I think when people are deep in meth, they can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And this is what we're trying to show is like, yeah, this is possible.
And then enjoy sex without.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And even, you know, still, you know, having really high experiences from the intimacy. And I think that's a thing that I'm really focusing on for this group.
And I know that Will, who sent a message before, is probably thinking, this is something that I might be interested in further down the track. And once again, we congratulate Will on his 100 days clean as well.
Yeah.
So with Q Health, I know in Alcoholics Anonymous, for example, we say that we'll help you to get sober and we'll help you to remain sober, but we by no means are medical professionals, and that you will only get out and stay sober if you seek help outside. For example, and ICE is so prevalent in our community. Is that the same with? Would you deal with a lot of people who go to Narcotics Anonymous and then want your help after that?
We do, and also we work with a lot of GPs and medical services, and detox centres, withdrawal services, and also rehab. So we work with a lot and help them with their what they call pharmacotherapy. So they're getting. Medication support, prescribed medication support, so we help with their counselling. So there's a team approach with supporting the person.
Yeah.
So they're not doing it by themselves, and we're not carrying it. So we try to help them maintain their medication while they're trying to recover.
And it's really hard to get through to people when it's going to be the hardest thing they've ever done, but it's also going to be the best thing that they've ever done for themselves. And it does take a team effort.
I like NA and AA. I think they do great work. I think they do great preliminary work.
Exactly.
But to me, like, underneath there's a deeper layer, which is often some kind of trauma or some people who don't want to touch into really difficult feelings. And that's where counselling and therapy are really wonderful approaches because, you know, you can stay with abstinence, but I think there's actually time to really go a bit deeper and dig into like their symptoms, but what was the cause?
How did I end up there in the first place?
And that's exactly what AA says. That you can't, you know, if you don't go find out the reason why you drank and face your fears or whatever demons it is, you can't. You'll relapse.
Yeah, the rooms are great, but I think there needs to be ancillary things around that. And the program, the Q Health program, I think is really wonderful to support those people to look deeper in a one-to-one situation and say, what happened and what strategies can help me with that.
So I was going to say, do you think there are reasons behind addiction in our LGBTI community?
Most definitely. So studies, being a social worker, I'm really big
on... Go, Daniel, do it. Stats, come on. This is the moment we're waiting for.
Stats. I adore stats.
You got 4 minutes on your marks. No, get Russ, set. Go, Russ read the thing you've highlighted.
I do like
stats. The biggest thing is what a lot of people feel in the LGBTI community is the minority stress. For them to go to a mainstream community and they see signs that everything is about it being in a heterosexual environment, the language, before we were able to get married, I mean, they were saying, are you single or are you married? They won't recognise partnerships in an LGBT or a same-sex relationship. So, I mean, there's the abuse of when you're growing up and the discrimination you had as being, gay or lesbian or trans person.
Yeah, exactly.
There's family abuse. There's that lack of... support, so you might be ostracized by your own blood family, so you feel totally isolated, so having no supports or anything like that there. So there's the stigma about being gay. We talked about internalised homophobia. So there are still families out there. We got government policies are changing where they want to be able to discriminate against LGBTI people and shame them. Mm. So that's a big thing. And when someone's going through that, they're going to feel more isolated. So if we can do what we can to keep connection with them while they're going down that journey and help them feel supported and come back to say that, yes, you are a good person. You do have respect. You've got a lot to offer the community. So, yes, we can work this together. So to give them a bit of hope, I think that's what we want to do with just being with them on their journey.
We got a lot more referrals around the time of the marriage equality plebiscite.
And I hear also around about that one-year anniversary as well. There was a spike in all services being accessed because people were vulnerable and certainly needing a lot of support and help during those periods.
Yeah.
That that was why we argued against a plebiscite. We argued against all of those different ways of achieving this when it could have been done so simply.
Yeah.
That's another topic for another show. Yeah. But
I'm curious.
No, but what sort of...
12 months down the road.
What sort of people
looking after people that are having failed marriages now? Is that?
Oh, I haven't met them.
You haven't met them?
No. One year's too early for that, Russ. Please,
that's good news.
Let these people stay married for a little while. But it's a great question. Do queer people have special problems? Yes and no. I think that societal pressure, family pressure, but mental health. For queer folk is disproportionately high, suicidality is disproportionately high, unemployment, homelessness, like all the bad things you can think of, queer folk are overrepresented.
I think that's, again, I think the service is so good.
Yeah.
For me personally, live and work in the ghetto. So for me, it's very rare these days that I feel unsafe. Live in Richmond, work in Kew, and so I'm not out in the burbs. And I don't, I think it's just great that if anyone is feeling unsafe about any single topic, they could call you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Talking about feeling safe, we had a Pride March the other day, and I know that it was a great show of unity, and everybody
was having a great time at the Pride March. We have somebody on the line. There was a small group in the Pride March. Hopefully you didn't blink and miss them because they are definitely a force. They're called Clean and Sober, and they're a group of people that are sober and clean, obviously. We have one of them online at the moment. This guy's name is Miles. Are you there, Miles?
I'm here. Thank you, David.
Look, it's great to hear your voice. I wanted to know, how did it feel walking down Fitzroy Street in a party atmosphere, clean and sober on Sunday in the Pride March?
It was great. It was great to be with my community, my tribe, celebrating who we are, clean and sober and gay. We walked around the corner on Fitzroy Street and there was just a huge cheer.
That was at the Prince of Wales?
I think that's the spot, yes.
This was the first time you've marched with the Pride March under the Clean and Sober banner?
It is, yes. I've been to Sydney Mardi Gras a few times, but actually the first time I've been to the Melbourne one as well.
And how did it feel walking down the street under that banner?
Oh, it was beautiful. I really loved seeing, especially a lot of the younger ones in our group, who it was sort of their first time bouncing clean and sober, and just to see them really just be so excited by the moment, and just to be happy and have a good time and not, feel the need to have drink or drugs. It was incredible.
And Miles, why do you think it's so important that that Clean and Sober participate every year and they're seen in a public forum like that?
Well, I think in the gay community, you can feel a bit like the only, gay in the village, not drinking. And you can feel a little bit on the outer, and it's just great to come and show and, show who you are and that it is possible to live a life without drink or drugs. So,
We've got many listeners tonight, so the main question that I'd like to ask you so they can hear this, and you had a bloody good time marching, didn't you?
Yes, and no headache the next day.
Yes, no headache. Of course, you would have been chanting, "We're here, we're queer, and we don't drink beer," I would expect.
Oh, nice, David.
No, we did. I did see a couple having a drink, and they sort of looked at each other and laughed and said, "Oh, sorry." I said, look, it's fine. Have one on us.
Yeah. Look, I know that there's a lot of supporting people in the crowds in the during the Pride March as you walk down that street, and people look you in the eye and they sort of go, ah, yes, there is another way. And they sort of look at you quite knowingly, don't they?
Yeah, I think maybe they're sort of maybe looking at themselves thinking, maybe I should give that a go. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I just think it's really important to be loud and proud and show who we are.
And demonstrate another way. Okay, thanks, Miles, for joining us. I know you're busy tonight, but we really appreciate you joining us for this message tonight.
My pleasure. Thanks, David.
Thanks again.
So that's a good welcome into the community, that even though the people don't drink and take drugs and they're clean and sober, they're still participating in things like Pride March and they're still participating in Fair Day, all of those sort
possibly
of things.
Possibly in life itself.
They're about to come up to their year of sobriety. They didn't think they could do a day a week. This person's in their 40s. They said, I've never been sober for more than a week since I was 14 years old. Mm. So a whole lifetime of substance and a whole generations of substance use behind them. And they recently decided they were happy to stop working with me, and we had a graduation ceremony.
Wow.
And I made them a little hand-painted certificate that said, you know, you've graduated from this work. And it was incredible. There was a lot of tears and a lot of gratitude between the two of us of like, yeah, you know, them grateful for me and me grateful for them because they've done the work. So their 1 year sobriety is coming up in mid-Feb. Yeah. And I will reach out to them on that day, I think. But it was such a beautiful thing to see, like, oh yeah, I can do this. This is possible.
How satisfying, not just for you, but also for them.
Yeah.
We hope that you've enjoyed tonight's show and remind you that if you're experiencing immediate problems or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36.
I'd like to thank Daniel and Jeremy from Q Health for being with us tonight. It's been Yay. A fantastic show. And remember, folks, it is important to move away from self-destructive reasoning. Recovery involves breaking the cycle of addiction, moving the trigger of negative thinking, and restoring us to emotional sobriety. One of the greatest highs in life is, of course, feeling good about ourselves. Always remember that none of us are alone in this world. And the first step in recovery is just quite simply to ask for help.
Yes, we want our community to be one of hope, and look forward to your company next week as we continue to explore addiction on Hooked. Meanwhile, it's goodbye from Russ.
Goodbye, David.
And it's goodbye from me, David. Goodbye.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.